Hi, and welcome to Crash Course Catholicism, a podcast about Catholic teaching and why it makes sense. I'm your host, Caitlin West. Hey friends, welcome to episode 59. This is one of our Lives of the Saints episodes. Today's saint was actually suggested by a patron, Daniel. Thanks, Daniel, and thank you so much for your support. By the way, I am loving the suggestions that I've been getting from listeners. Please keep those coming because they have been super helpful. So, today's saint is Saint Mark G. Tianchang, and he lived in the late 1800s. He was a doctor and a martyr, and he was also a drug addict. And what's amazing about him is that he wasn't a drug addict who recovered from his addiction and then became super holy. He was actually a drug addict at the time of his death. He grew holy while struggling with his addiction. So, in this episode, we're going to go through his biography, and then we'll discuss some of the things that we can take away from his story, because this is a saint that has a lot to teach us in the 21st century. So, Mark G was born in China in 1834. He was raised a Christian, and he eventually got married and became a doctor, and he was a well-respected member of his community. One of the things that we know about his life prior to his addiction was that he was known for providing medical treatment to the poor for free. So even as a young man, he had a great love for God and for his faith, and he was trying to live a good Christian life. However, when he was in his mid-30s, Mark G came down with a stomach illness and he was in a lot of pain. And because he was a doctor, he decided to treat himself by taking opium. So for context, opium is a drug that is used today to make morphine, codeine, and also heroin. I read one description of it as a pure form of heroin. So it is a powerful pain reliever, but it's also a really strong and really serious drug. Now, at the time, opium was commonly used in medicine to treat pain, but there weren't the kind of regulations around its use that we would have today. And the problem with opium is that it is highly, highly addictive. And unfortunately, Mark G very quickly became addicted to opium. So, opium addicts in 19th century China were really looked down on. So if we think about the attitudes that people often have today towards heroin addicts, it's very similar to the way opium addicts were thought of. Opium addiction was considered deeply shameful. So Mark G, when he became an addict, suddenly had to carry this very deep shame. He struggled with his addiction for years. He prayed constantly for God's help to overcome it, but he just wasn't able to. And when we think about how opium addiction works, this makes a lot of sense. People who are coming off opium have severe withdrawal symptoms, sometimes so severe that they can die. Coming off opium is an incredibly difficult thing. If you've ever tried to like quit smoking or drinking, imagine doing that, but times like a bajillion. It is incredibly difficult. So Mark G found it impossible to quit taking the drug. Now, because he was a practicing Catholic, Mark G would go to confession regularly to confess the sin of taking opium. However, after a few years of this, his parish priest told him not to come back to confession until he had kicked his habit. This priest didn't believe that Mark G was truly sorry for his sin because he kept falling back into it. And he told him that he wouldn't be able to receive absolution or to receive any of the other sacraments until he had come off the drug. Now, this is probably not the approach that a priest would take today. But to understand why this happened, we need to understand two things. First of all, the church's teaching on absolution, and secondly, the way that people thought about addiction at the time. So first of all, you might remember from our episode on confession that in order to receive forgiveness of your sins, you need to be sorry for your sin and also to have a clear purpose of amendment. In other words, you need to be genuinely committed to trying not to sin again. And that makes sense, right? Like, you can't be forgiven for something that you aren't sorry for. If you were to go to confession and be like, I've been shoplifting and I have no intention of stopping, then you're just telling the priest a fact. You're not actually asking for forgiveness. So you can't be forgiven. But if you were to go to confession and say, I've been shoplifting, it's a compulsion, I find it very difficult to control, I'm sorry and I'm really going to try to stop. Okay, in that instance, you do have a purpose of amendment. Even if you fall straight back into that sin again. And that's the key thing. A purpose of amendment doesn't mean that you definitely won't sin again. It just means that you are genuinely committed to trying. The only thing God requires of us in confession is that we are sorry and we're going to try with his help. Now, from the outside, it can look like someone doesn't have a purpose of amendment if they keep falling back into something over and over. It can look like they're not really trying, even if they are. And this is particularly true of someone who is addicted to something. However, today we understand that addiction affects our bodies and our minds in a way that can make it very difficult to stop, even when we're genuinely trying. And this leads us to the second point, which is that in the 19th century, there was a lot less medical knowledge around how addiction works. Today, we understand that addiction is an illness that severely compromises a person's freedom. However, 100-odd years ago, people often thought that drug addicts just weren't trying hard enough. So this priest, it's not like he was being cruel or he was trying to punish Mark G. He just didn't have the medical knowledge to understand that this guy was in the grip of an addiction. So Mark G wasn't able to receive the sacraments anymore, which meant he couldn't go to confession and he also couldn't receive the Eucharist. Now, at this point, it would have been very easy for him to just give up on his faith and succumb to his addiction. Like, imagine if you were struggling with something and everyone around you is basically blaming you and shunning you and telling you that you're not trying hard enough. It would be so easy to just throw your hands in the air and be like, well, I guess they're right. I messed up. I can't do it. I might as well just lean in and stop fighting. But Mark G didn't do that. Not only did he keep fighting his addiction, he also continued to go to Mass regularly, sometimes daily, even though he couldn't receive communion. He would sit up the back and he would watch everyone else go up to communion and he would just sit there and pray. And this continued for 30 years. Can you imagine that? 30 years of fighting and praying and failing and trying again, all without the help of the sacraments. That is an incredible amount of dedication and love for God. So during that time, during those 30 years, one of Mark G's prayers was that he might be able to die a martyr. And the reason for this was that he knew the church's teaching that martyrdom obtains the forgiveness of all sins. St. Augustine puts it like this. He writes, "When any die for the confession of Christ, it avails as much for the remission of their sins as if they had been washed in the sacred font of baptism." And this teaching comes from our Lord's words in the Gospel of Matthew chapter 16, "Whoever loses his life for my sake will find it." So Mark G knew this and he begged God that he might be allowed to die for him. So in the year 1899, the Boxer Rebellion broke out. The Boxer Rebellion was a 2-year uprising in which Chinese nationalists targeted, in particular, foreigners and Christians. And during those 2 years, thousands of Christians and hundreds of foreign missionaries were killed for their faith. So in the year 1900, Mark G and his family, including his son, his 6 grandchildren, and his 2 daughters-in-law, were all arrested for being Christian, along with dozens of others. They were all put on trial and told to renounce their faith, but they refused and were then condemned to death. Apparently, on the way to their execution, Mark G's grandson turned to him and asked where they were going, and he responded, "We're going home." Isn't that so beautiful? Once they reached the place of execution, Mark G asked that he might be executed last of all because he didn't want anyone in his family to be left alone, and he wanted to be able to encourage and console each of them. So he stood there and he watched while his children and grandchildren were beheaded one by one. And as he watched, he sang the litany of the Blessed Virgin Mary. And finally, he was executed last of all. Now, at the time of his death, Mark G was still an opium addict. He had not overcome that addiction when he died. He's not a saint because he overcame his addiction. He's a saint because he never, ever quit fighting, and he maintained his faith even in the face of death. So in 1946, Pope Pius XII beatified Mark G, and in the year 2000, he was officially declared a saint by Pope John Paul II. In 2017, an artist called Eric Durant created a statue of Mark G, which is now at St. Anne's Shrine in Massachusetts in the USA, and I'll provide a link to an image of the statue in the show notes. It's an incredibly powerful image. I recommend checking it out because in it, Mark G looks pretty awful, basically. Like, he's completely emaciated and clearly in the midst of his addiction, and he's holding an opium pipe and looking up to heaven. And it's just an incredible image because it would be so tempting to kind of sanitize or minimize Mark G's struggles with addiction. When it comes to holiness and sanctity, we can be tempted to just put aside or put out of sight anything that doesn't look perfect. It would be so easy to just emphasize Mark G's holiness because he was very pious in his lifetime. But instead, this artist has chosen not to hide his addiction and to show that this man became a saint through his struggles with his own brokenness. And this is one of the things that we can take away from Mark G's story, that perfection isn't a prerequisite for beginning our journey to sanctity. Our brokenness, our faults, our struggles, this is the stuff that God uses to sanctify us. Like, okay, think of it like this. Imagine that you had broken both of your legs in a car accident and you needed to learn how to walk again. In that situation, you wouldn't just like cut off your broken legs and then attach a pair of perfectly functioning mechanical limbs and then kind of skip off into the sunset like Inspector Gadget. No, you would use your broken legs to learn how to walk again. You heal them, you build the muscle mass back up, you slowly relearn how to put weight on them. And the same is true of our broken humanity. God doesn't want to kind of magically replace it with something perfect. He wants us to become saints through our struggles with our brokenness. In fact, that's what the path to sanctity is, becoming perfected through, not in the absence of, our struggle. There's a video by Father Mike Schmitz where he talks about St. Catherine of Siena. St. Catherine is, amongst other things, known for having done some pretty intense penances during her lifetime. And one day, these students came to Father Mike and they were like all in a tizzy because they had just read a book about St. Catherine where someone had claimed that all of her penances made her look really holy, but in actual fact, she just had an eating disorder. And these students were like, you know, we don't know what to do. Our world has been shattered because we really looked up to St. Catherine. We thought she was so amazing. And it turns out it was just mental illness. And Father Mike didn't know what to say, so he went to his own spiritual director and he was like, what do I tell these students? Like, what if she had an eating disorder? What does that mean for her sanctity? And his spiritual director, I love his response, he was like, dude, so what? All that means is that Catherine of Siena was a saint who had an eating disorder. You know, maybe she did have an illness, just like how some people have cancer or depression. And God was able to sanctify her through that particular form of brokenness. Now, that's not to say that an eating disorder or an addiction, that these are good things, or that a person shouldn't struggle against them and try to overcome them. Of course, they absolutely should. However, it's a good reminder that we should never despair during our struggle or tell ourselves that if we just didn't have this particular form of brokenness, that then we would be holy. No, God wants us to struggle through our brokenness to holiness. We also need to distinguish here between deliberate sin and illness. This is a really important distinction. When it comes to something like mental illness or disorders or addictions, something like what Mark G went through, very often a person's freedom to choose can be radically limited, and this can reduce their culpability for a sin, even if, you know, technically speaking, the thing that they're doing is serious. So for instance, taking drugs, that is always a serious thing. That is grave matter, no matter what the situation is. However, a person's culpability will be in proportion to their freedom to choose. So there's a difference between someone who deliberately and freely chooses to take drugs at a party, knowing that it's wrong, but because they just want to have fun. There's a difference between that and someone who is struggling with the illness of addiction, And despite their best efforts, they have a slip up because they're not fully in control of their actions. And in many situations, there might actually be an element of both things present. So it's often not one or the other. Often a person might be partly culpable or they might have reduced culpability. So we have to bear that in mind. In the case of Mark G., we can't judge someone's soul from the outside, right? We don't know. But he could well have been in the state of grace for those 30 years because by the time that he'd been denied confession, his freedom to choose had been so totally reduced by the addiction that he might not have been culpable for the sin of taking opium. He might have been culpable for those initial decisions that led to the addiction, but not necessarily for the later part of the struggle. As I said, we don't know. We can't read his soul, but we have to bear that in mind. And I make this point for two reasons. One, because it reminds us to be understanding with ourselves and also with others whenever illness or addiction or coercion might be influencing their actions. And we need to know that God also takes those things into account. The other reason, though, that I make this point is kind of the opposite reason, to remind us to not be complacent. Like, we might look at someone like Mark G and think, oh, well, like, I guess I can just be like him. Like, I don't really need to worry. I can, you know, be consistently committing mortal sins, and then I'll just have like a big conversion at the end of my life. Or if I'm lucky, I'll die a martyr and then it will all be forgiven. Okay, Mark G, if we look at his actions throughout his life, the fact that he consistently kept going to mass, he was praying for martyrdom, he was able to die for his faith, he referred to his execution as going home. If we look at all of that, it seems likely that he wasn't someone who was cut off from God and had no relationship with him for his whole life and then just had a conversion in his final moments. He was someone who was suffering from an illness, but who also had a very deep relationship with God, and he never gave up on the struggle, and God used that illness to draw him to himself. So in our own lives, we might be struggling with addiction, and it might not be addiction to, you know, hard drugs, but it might be things like alcohol or pornography or sex or phones or social media or exercise. Pretty much all of us have some sort of attachment to things that might be disordered or even sinful. And we might have varying degrees of culpability depending on how firm a hold that thing has on us. And we might find ourselves falling over and over. We might wish that God would just take this thing away so that we could finally be holy. Sometimes God does need to take something away. And if that's the case, then he will. But we have to remember, and I've said it like five times, but it's so important. Holiness doesn't mean that we just magically have no faults. Like, imagine someone who just naturally was good at everything and they had all these external virtues, right? They're not necessarily more holy than someone who struggles a lot and wears all of their faults on their sleeves, but internally is desperately struggling to become a saint and to be closer to God. And this leads us to another takeaway from Mark G's story, which is that we can never, ever, 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 ever give up. Ever. We do not have permission to stop fighting. The path to sanctity, it is messy and imperfect, and sometimes we have really big falls. It's not just a single linear upward line, but the main thing is that we never, ever, ever give up. Mark G struggled with his addiction for 30 years before his martyrdom. Mother Teresa once said, God doesn't require us to succeed. He only requires that you try. So no matter how many times we fall, we should never despair or even get discouraged. God is not expecting total perfection. He's expecting a struggle. And this is one of the areas where the devil can trip us up. He can try to get us to focus on the outcome, whether we're perfectly nailing it every single time. But that's not what God is looking at. God is looking at our hearts, at how sincerely we are struggling to do the right thing. I want to read a quote from Jacques Philippe that has brought me a lot of peace personally. He says, "We might believe that to win the spiritual battle, we must vanquish all our faults, never succumb to temptation, have no more weaknesses or shortcomings. But on such a terrain, we are sure to be vanquished, because who among us can pretend never to fall? And it is certainly not this that God demands of us, for he knows of what we are made. He remembers we are dust." Psalm 103. On the contrary, the real spiritual battle, rather than the pursuit of invincibility or some other absolute infallibility beyond our capacity, consists principally in learning without becoming too discouraged, to accept falling occasionally, and not to lose our peace of heart if we should happen to do so lamentably, not to become excessively sad regarding our defeats, and to know how to rebound from our falls to an even higher level. This is always possible, but on the condition that we not panic and that we continue to maintain our peace. I feel like enough said. That just perfectly sums it up. The only thing we need to do is keep struggling. Now, one of the best ways that we can struggle against sin is, of course, by making use of the sacraments, especially confession and communion. You know, sometimes it can be embarrassing when we go to confession and we just say the same thing over and over. And we might think, oh my gosh, like surely God is going to get sick of this at some point and just say, right, that's it. I give up. You're never going to get there. I don't want you to come back here until you've conquered this sin. But that is not the case. This is the same Jesus who told his apostles to forgive others 70 times seven times. He will never, ever, ever, ever get sick of forgiving us, ever. The other thing that we can do when we're struggling with something is to keep going to Mass, even if we can't receive communion. If we're not in the state of grace, so we don't have sanctifying grace in our souls, we can still receive what's called actual graces. In other words, we can still receive God's external help, those promptings from the Holy Spirit that move us towards conversion. So if we're going to Mass, even if we can't receive communion, God sees that and he is so proud of us. He loves us and he will reward that effort with his actual graces, and that will help us to return to him. So I knew of someone once who was in a habitual state of serious sin. So they were in an ongoing kind of permanent situation that they knew was sinful, but they weren't quite prepared to leave it yet. And even though this person couldn't go to communion, they just kept going to Mass every Sunday. They would sit up the back and they would pray for God's help. And eventually, after a while of doing this, they were able to find the strength to leave that situation and go to confession and return to full communion with the church. And the fact that they had remained kind of tethered to their faith, even though they couldn't be in full communion with the church, that had been a huge help in that journey. Sometimes the closest that we can get to doing the right thing is just wanting to do the right thing, or even wanting to want to do the right thing. When I was a kid, my mum used to say that to me. She'd be like, Caitlin, sometimes you just need to tell God, God, I want to do the right thing. Please help me. And if that's where we're at, okay, that's where we start. God will meet us there. He will reward our struggles with his actual graces and lead us to conversion if we let him. So we should never, ever despair and never, ever give up, no matter how far we are from him. And just a word of encouragement before we finish up. If you are ever in a situation where you go to Mass and you can't receive communion and you feel ashamed or embarrassed because you're the only person in the church who's sitting down while everyone else is going on to communion, think of it this way. Rather than thinking, oh gosh, I am the only person in this church who can't receive communion, flip it, right? Think to yourself, I am the only person who can't go to communion who is still coming to Mass. That is huge. That is awesome. It's a powerful act of love, and God sees it and he loves you and he will reward it. He's so proud of you for taking whatever steps you can to get close to him. So never, ever give up. Okay, that's all we have time for today. Next episode, to coincide with the end of October, we're going to talk about Catholicism and Halloween. What a great idea. This was not my idea. This was another listener suggestion. And I was like, you are a genius. So that's what we're going to talk about in our next episode. Catholicism and Halloween. Such fun. I cannot wait. Have a fantastic week. And I will talk to you later. Bye. Thanks for listening to Crash Course Catholicism. If you are enjoying this podcast and you'd like to support it, you can do so by subscribing and leaving a review. You can also become a patron on Patreon. But most importantly, please pray for me and for everyone listening to this podcast. Have a fantastic day. Bye.